Alright, another exciting recording going on. I'm just leaving Taos, headed back home slowly. Gonna see how everybody's doing on the path. I dream about, and it's weird and twisted. You dream about how an interview is going to go when something, after you've done something amazing, like the current effort right now, which is to be an American, ending up in Shetland, and being this big kind of almost, lieutenant governor or something of what will become the Crown Dependency of Shetland, you know. It's an interesting idea. And when somebody comes and talks to you and they say, well, you know, and they're so, you know, I'm speaking with an important person, and you kind of come off as being really down there, you know, and they say, well, how did you first come up with the whole idea of this? And you go, well, you know, it all has to do with, it's actually after you see it work a few times, it's kind of a philosophical thing, you know. You tend to have a bug or get a bug, an almost obsessional need to be a certain way, and in working out that obsession, it leads you to something, and some amazing things happen. That's why I'm so honoring of obsessions, is that I think they lead to some pretty interesting things. You know, I'm quite sure that Adolf Hitler now, this is a bad example, Adolf Hitler was probably very obsessed with what he ultimately ended up doing. I don't think, you know, you could sit there and say that, you know, when he was 5 years old or 12 or whatever, that he decided that he wanted to exterminate all the Jews. I don't think, you know, and that everything that he did past that was effort toward doing that. He was just successful. And you go, you know, I don't think that's ever true. I think we have certain attributes about ourselves that enable us to do these sorts of things, you know. It isn't something that can be done by just anybody, you know. Everybody says, well, we want to teach this stuff. And you go, this isn't, I don't think this is subject to teaching. I don't think you can just take anybody off the street, put them through the Hitler training program, and turn them into, you know, Adolf Hitler. I don't think you can just do that. Thank goodness, too. That there is just as much to do with it, perhaps even more, to do with it's just the kind of person that you are. you know, and it isn't schooled so much, you know. It can be somewhat environmental. I don't really want to take away from that, you know. You had a bad home life when you were a kid, or any number of things. But it has to do a lot of drive, and as far as I'm aware, you can't teach drive. You can't really teach it. Either you have it or you don't. And I can't think of a circumstance where circumstances make that happen. I mean, you can deaden it. Everything can be deadened. Everything can be gotten rid of. I was just watching a documentary called The War on Kids. And it was all about schools, about how badly schools are done, and how it almost seems like it's some kind of great conspiracy. You know, we actually made schools to dumb down kids. We actually made them to destroy children. And to be really honest, although there might have been some personalities involved with it, I don't think that it was absolutely necessary to have this done. That circumstance could have done it. So these amazing things can be dead. You can just choose not to act on them. You can sit there and numb yourself, either through drugs or just through sloth or inactivity, or, you know, there's just a myriad of ways that you cannot become one of these people. But I think if you're, and I'll throw in a little bit of a Mormonism to it by saying that I think, you know, this is part of one's nature, and that it's inherent in you. You know, if you're, well, you have since birth, you go, yeah, but you know, Mormons believe that you probably had it before. You know, it's the essence of who you are. You know, it's beyond that of spirit and intelligence. We actually have different. You know, first we were intelligent. Then we got spirit bodies and born as spirit. And then we grew up a little bit that way. And now is our time to have physical bodies, although mortal ones. And then ultimately we will graduate from this into immortal bodies. And that who we are is somewhat constant across all. You know, but you know, circumstances, things, and other matters can always intervene and can always keep you from, I guess, what I would say is reaching your potential. And I've been successfully working on my potential for a long time. I'm kind of in a slow period. I want to shake free of that. But I also think it's because I'm ill on a certain level. And so I don't know when I'm going to shake that out. I always do. That's probably the primary thing about obsession is it doesn't matter, you know. I guess they can put you to therapy and try to get you not to be so obsessional. But I think that's only temporary, you know. Kind of like my computerized bulletin board system, which I actually have running right now. It's not dial-up right now, although it's in the capacity to do so rather shortly. I use it for my email, for my jason@qix.me email. nice little system. Somebody came and interviewed me, and what I would say and how things would go when they said the things, so kind of map us out the whole expanse of how family ascendancy and shepherd came about. And yeah, and that's the first thing I would say. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing about people. I've noticed more and more as I go along how it really does end up being about people. You know, nothing. You know, I struggle with Darwinists. I am not a believer in any sense in evolution. You know, that something good comes from evolutionary movement. You know, that all I've ever seen that seemed to me to fit the criteria of being evolutionary is what we would call devolution, you know, kind of going back. And the fact is, you have to have an active force pushing things ahead. And not just pushing things from where they sit, something is static and you put it into motion. It's actually, by nature, degenerating all the time. You know, it's always falling back to some more primitive, less evolved sort of thing. You know, instead, I don't believe in evolution. I keep seeing more examples of devolution. And that one needs an active force preventing that from happening. You know, movement forward is done by people. The concept of evolution did not produce the light bulb. The concept of evolution did not, you know, give us worldwide communication. It said it's not evolutionary. It is people, active thinkers, perhaps obsessed, let's be honest, that push this stuff forward. Sometimes devolution can be a good thing if things have gone horribly wrong. You know, I think there is kind of a continuum, and that static place is kind of in the middle, you know. That when you get rid of a lot of people, things tend to stabilize themselves. And the question is always, is that stable place better than where you are now? I don't know if that's what God's criteria is for when he sends something like Satan to break the blood. I know a lot of people say, oh, that's a story. Well, you know. But there are some times when we start looking back and we say, you know what, we just need to leave stuff well enough alone. And not worry about. We haven't gotten to that point yet. You know. People are learning and growing and figuring out what they need to do. We always thought our interventions would make things better. And we found out that some of our interventions make things worse. And I think it ultimately becomes the idea of we have to be smarter, you know. I guess it, you can equate kind of an Amish way of looking at things, you know. It isn't against improvement. It isn't against progress. It is making conscious choices of that. Not letting processes just run their course. That is always and forever the difference between man and, say, animals. We can even have animals that look a lot like men, that have a lot of human manners, that even display some rudiments of a larger intelligence. But nothing from that extreme, you know. All the people who think somehow the dolphins are smarter than we are. You know, that comedy. I read Douglas Adams, and that's comedy. That's funny. The only way in which dolphins are better than we are is in the whole standpoint of people have chosen a wrong path and are doing so poorly and have taken such a wrong course that that we've actually gone on the bad side past status. Where if you were just to have left well enough alone, the circumstance would have been better. At least relatively. You know. Once you get smarter, once you apply, you know, honest logic, honest empiricism, honest, you know, access God honestly, as opposed to using some kind of weird sledgehammer. You can do some pretty amazing things. And so when it comes to Shetland and what brings me here and what brought us to this place where we have created a government that is more of an alliance among families. It begins from a very interesting place, and I'll be really honest, but I am I'm a broken person. I'm a broken person, but I'm broken in ways that God uses for it. I do feel a sense of a mission. about what I do. But it is a feeling out for where you're supposed to go. I call it the psychic proximity principle, that you will be drawn toward your what you're supposed to be doing, what is best for you, where you fit in, you know, whether it's proximity or work or things like that. You will be drawn to them as long as you are willing to follow, in Mormon parts we call it the spirit. And that's my press to look at. It is a person. You know, an intelligent force. And you let it guide you. For those who don't believe in those things, which is most, I have to say, I claim it's a weak magnetism. You know, and almost, you know, people look at the prophets trying to figure this out and scoff. You know, because it really is almost, you know, it appears like dowsing. You remember dowsing, right? You'd have a stick or a couple of pieces of copper wire, and you would seek out water through this. And, you know, some people would look at it as kind of accessing some spirit or stuff like that. And it does. It does. It does seem that way. I don't know what the validity of finding water put a little hickory stick in. I, you know, that's really beyond me. I don't know. I don't know. Although, what I did to get here was a bit of that. But I was I remember a lot about my childhood, so. And I consider that a blessing. It might have been a bad child, but I don't know. Really have to ask other people, probably ask my mother. You know, I've always found myself attracted to, always kind of dreamed of being a lighthouse. Back when there used to be such a thing. Now there's not. But just taking care of something with distance and a little off the corners. A place that ends up being a singular destination. You know, because before I came to Shetland, I lived in, I don't know where my mother came from, pretty much since childhood. Oh, I've always been in places that are on somebody's way to somewhere, and the people I think who were in those places were kind of getry. Isn't that rude? That's rude. You know, I think I can get away with it because, to a large extent, that's what I noise has been kind of alleviating, you know, or dropping, ceasing at a certain level. The place I live last, over 20 years, Tucumcari, in the American state of New Mexico. It's a waypoint. People stop there, you know. People stop there to go to the bathroom. People stop there to get gas. And if people aren't careful about their plans and what they're doing, they may end up spending the night there. And there is a place that's always losing relevance, and I never liked being there. I found it a depressed and hopeless place, you know. I worked with public health there for a while. I think probably the biggest problem, you know, there's plenty of drugs, there's plenty of alcohol, plenty of depression, plenty of suicide. I think it was all predominantly tied just that, just being kind of a hopeless, purposeless place, you know. I think everybody that did well in Tucumcari in the past had been, you know, kind of an opportunist sort of people. And, call them entrepreneurial, but honestly, I would have to do it more of economic reason. That sounds bad, but you know, there is a certain way that you look at things, you know. You can look at things as an opportunity to grow, an opportunity to build something, an opportunity to, and you can look at places that way, too. But you know that some places are just considered a pile of resources, a pile of potential money, a pile of people, you know, that are, you know, you can call it service if you want to, that I serve these people. Or you could call it, you know, I made money off of these people, you know. I guess it all has to do with how you look at it, but I think it also has to do with the way that you tend to look at it. So Tucumcari, you know, that was, you know, it was a vibrant going place, I guess, until about before. You know, and I don't think it ever quite survived the war. Or maybe it did. Maybe it went to the 50s. All of it started to try. Anyway. But, you know, when the opportunity started to peter out, those who were opportunists, the ones I tend to call rapists, moved on to better fishing. You know, and I'm not here to denigrate anybody, although when they say, oh, you're calling me a rapist, you go, well, you think I was talking about. You should think of yourself as another guy. Well, I'm going to wherever the markets are best. And you go, I'm not going to sit there and poo-poo your view of it. I said, but, you know, you're here to absolutely maximize your profits. I mean, your devotion to caring doesn't extend very far. You know, you could have kept your headquarters here. You could have stayed open here. And just say, hey, this is what we do. You know, and then and that may not have been smart or not as a sense of business. But, you know, because, you know, you came, you took money from, you know, you took money from the people here. I'm not saying you didn't provide some. And, took the resources available. So I pushed me into shove. And it wasn't, the cash cow anymore. You walked away, right? It's okay, you know. You have to realize. Okay, now, you know, it really becomes, in the end, is it about money? Is it about family? It truly is where you're coming from. If it is a thing about money, yeah. The money people left. And the gastria, the poop, for lack of a better term, is what left behind. You know, and I came here long after success was gone. You know, it's still on a downward slope, but I think it's starting to kind of, you know, there's like a logarithmic slope clearly up, whether it's going up or whether it's going down. I think it's definitely sliding out on that long little tail going out to oblivion, you know, headed ultimately toward zero. And it's perfect. And it tends to accumulate people who are missing so much. Not saying all of them are, you know. But yeah, you know. Of the kids that grow up, go to school, and then if they get out of school, you know, the parents tell is very insensitive. What they do after that, if they just hang around, you have to understand, there are no, as far as I'm aware of, at least in the United States, there are no lower places. You know, there's very few places you can move to that are cheaper to live in, that are less demanding of people, and, you know, I've been 20 years. And I think, in a sense, because I was taking such a different course, and my development was so much different than what would probably have been, you know. I guess I appreciated Chicken Carey's sense of not really having much expectation of anything, because it means I didn't have to spend a lot of time manicuring the lawn. I remember my brother talking about Southern California. He used to live there. When I left a child, never really came back after. You know, the occasional visit. And he was talking to his son, who lived in some small child from Texas about how we were California government cars. Buy a nice car every now and then, and spend their time bathing that car. Or, you know, doing a bunch of ornamentals around their house so it's beautiful and modern. But I have no qualms with those people. I'm just not one of those people. I think both of my neighbors on each side of me have expressed their desire that I do a better job on this, and I've rushed them across the street. I've rushed them off a lot. Because I'm busy. Whatever I'm about, I'm busy with it, and I don't have time to push one now. You know, I mow my lawn sometimes. I've got to the point where I get my kids to do it for me. Always with the view that being an adult is always more fun than being a child. And I've always wanted to impress that on them, you know. You're not free as a child. And we've done a bad job of teaching children. Kind of one of the things that I think comes out in this The War on Kids documentary is that we give children empty, really quite purposeless lives. Where everything's taken care of for them. And the terrible incentive is they just want to stay kids forever. They like being kids, you know. Nobody demands anything of me. And I'm sure people say that about me, but oh, he's just some person that never really understood the importance of keeping a good front yard, waxing your car, you know, on a regular basis. I'll be really honest. I am not interested in that kind of stuff. Period. Because I've got other interests, you know. And of course, most people don't have any real interests at all. You know, they have their hobbies, which is fun. They have, you know. But when you say, what do you really need to do in life, they give this blank stare. You know, the whole point in life is to get a decent job, secure, and, you know, la 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 la. And that you work toward retirement, and then, you know, and you do some things that you like, and you do them more after you're retired, and, you build up your store of toys, things that you enjoy. Never really been that type of a guy. I got my computer fetish, but it's, you know, it was always towards some larger purpose. for me are tools. And in being a tool, you know, I get weird about backups and stuff like that. You know, I always want to have two vehicles. Because I know if I only have one vehicle, at times it's going to break down. Life is quite difficult, at least in the cheapest train in Mexico, without a car. It's, you know, and that's why I don't have a problem gravitating sort of circumstance for it. Whether it's public transportation, you have to understand, in the, you know, one of the reasons for my leaving the United States, everybody wants to know why. You know, well, is it political? You know, not really. But because I am, you know, everybody knows I'm firmly a libertarian, and the only place that even approached liberty on any kind of scale at all is the United States of America. Didn't last very long. Tragically, didn't last very long at all. You know, there are other kinds, you know, when you look at surveys, and I don't put tons of stock in surveys, often politically motivated, America doesn't stand well in a lot of facets. You know, happiness. I think you're actually in the Liberty Index. The United States doesn't fare too well in that one either. So, I always wanted to live kind of at a remote destination. I don't like people around. Let me tell you, if you're along a highway, if you're on the way to something, you know, you're going to get a lot of cross traffic. Although people are just fine in general, I have to be really honest. I'm often quite disappointed in people. Individuals. So, I want to be off the beaten path. I've lived alongside the path for a long time. I want to basically be away from the path. And so, you want to be someplace that so far off the path that people don't go through it, you know, on their way to something else. They're going there, you know. If somebody comes to Shetland, it isn't necessarily, it typically is not because you're trying to get to Iceland and Lerwick would put me on your way. I'm not saying can't be for a boater or something like that, but you know, so far places off the map, remote place, I like remote place, not depopulated. Because I do know that no man can be an island, and that really informs, you know, after one thinks about it for a while, that really does inform the whole concept. Families can be reasonably self-reliant, you know, out of the labors of a family. Come a lot of things beyond just subsistence. You know, art, music, poetry. Because otherwise, there's just too much to do to keep things going, you know. It's difficult to, you know, you don't see these things coming out of the lone mountain, you know, that goes out as a trapper or whatever. You don't see that person's survival there. They live a very strange and cloistered existence. You know, it's hard, it's rough. One person alone, presented with wild land. And some accoutrements. See, that's always what comes to mind. The accoutrements need to sit in the, you know, whether it's the country or the food and stuff like that. Typically, you just need work. That's where family is. That first level of existence that can actually be self-supporting. Now, I know you get single people out there who are very wealthy, who live very well, and don't need anybody else. But you have to remember how difficult that is, individual key person can't really take care of it. Even if they're wealthy and they've gotten to the point to where they have great wealth, they still have to have other people. They may be paid service, you know. I go to a grocery store and buy my food. I'm independent. I can go out and buy my own food with my own money. This is, but you can't raise that stuff, you know. You don't have time enough to take care of all your needs and make up. At some point, you have to make that trade-off. And some people define that as a fight. I tend to call them family substitute. You know? You can pay any number of people to perform for you the kind of services that a family would tend to perform not for money but for, you know, for other things, you know, working together, trying to trade-ish type barter type thing. And it works better because you are bound together by blood ties. And, you know, that always works better. And that's why I tend to de-emphasize the individual as an entity, because, frankly, individuals can't generate the kind of surplus that society must draw upon. You know, you aren't gonna find that unless somehow stumble onto some great, you know, money opportunity. Or something, you know, who knows exactly. And these are people, whether you pay for them or whether because of blood ties, you're just attached to each other and you feel beholden to us. And that really is kind of the basis of what happens with this man. That's what that is. So, I'm probably need to do kind of just a little tired. So, let's stop this.